VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It is Saturday morning. It is hard to say. It is Saturday morning at 10 o'clock. That can only mean that this is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And we have our little visitor in the corner who isn't speaking because she's got her headphones on playing. But Adam's daughter is with us today in the studio, which is always kind of fun. And having you guys along for the ride is also kind of fun. You know that callers will always get top priority on this radio show. Man, I'm about half here, huh?
Mm-hmm.
I think it was what happened this week in politics that has me kind of tongue-tied. We'll get into more of that. You know, I hate politics normally, and 100 times worse this week. But a lot of this impacts your money, and I think that is something that everybody ought to pay a little attention to. And it just happened that some of my topics today are going to be on things that are directly related to taxes. Don't hang up. Don't turn off the radio. I'm not going to make it boring. I'm just going to tell you a few things. But anyway, all the regulars, welcome back. You're the reason we get up and do what we do every Saturday morning. If you're new to the show and just getting used to it, stick around for the hour. Hopefully you'll learn something. And as I said, if you want to change the editorial comment or editorial direction, or just plain content, or ask a question, whatever you want to do. The reason you listen to live radio is because you can participate. If you want to listen to pre-recorded programs or reruns, they're all over the place, but not here, not now, and our goal is never. Been doing pretty well on that. Didn't get kicked out of town for a hurricane once in a while, but other than that, we haven't missed in 4.5 years. And that seems almost impossible. Not the not missing, but the 4.5 years.
Yeah, it's really flown by.
Yeah, amazing. Anywho, we will talk today about, as I said, some tax things. We're going to talk a little bit about some pseudo, maybe a little bit political things. And I got a bunch of just crazy headlines again. I tell you, everybody probably knows what silly season means. It's the time right before an election. It's still over 13 months away.
Ugh.
And I don't think it can get sillier, can it?
I can't imagine how, but I know that because I just said that, it will.
Yeah, you're right. And in the Congress, who, by the way, having arrived from their six-week vacation just long enough to schedule a two-week break, is now out of session again for 2 weeks. What's sitting there that I care about undone? The Secure Act.
Yeah, that and the
taxes part two.
North American.
USMCA.
Yeah.
There's more. These are all things that need to be done. They need to be done now. And you can't get them done because the law says it's those idiots that just took 2 more weeks off that have to do them. So it's very frustrating these days. And then, of course, you see how it bleeds over to the market. And the market's taking it really, really well, I think.
Actually, I don't think it bled to the market at all. I think
it seems like it hasn't.
No, I think the drop this week was the China trade talks or lack thereof or whatever you want to call it. There were a couple of small bits of news that didn't seem super positive, and the market kind of took it in stride. The only thing that really was affected was the NASDAQ, and I was going to talk about that in a little bit.
Well, carry on.
Yeah, it was really a kind of a ho-hum week. I mean, there wasn't a lot of moves in the market at all on either direction. The Dow in particular held up really, really well. I think everyone was just focused on what was happening in D.C., and I think they were weighing out how it was going to affect the market. And I think the conclusion, based on the numbers I'm looking at, says that they don't think it will affect the market very much. I don't want to talk too much about it because I don't feel like giving airtime to something so ridiculous and meaningless. is really worthy of our show. But yeah, I think the stock market shrugged it off. And the Dow closed down just 0.4%. The S&P just 1%, and the NASDAQ 2.2%. The NASDAQ dipped into negative territory for the month, but just by 0.3%. And we still have one more day for that to go either direction. So we'll see how it closes out.
Could wind up positive.
Yeah, so for the quarter, the same thing is true. The NASDAQ is slightly negative, while the Dow and the S&P are slightly positive. And so we'll see what happens on Monday. There was other news outside of the Washington fiasco this week that the market didn't hate, it didn't love it, but it didn't react positively to it. Both Trump and the China delegation spoke on the trade deal, and the news, it just didn't seem very encouraging. There are rumors that the U.S. is considering some sort of limits on Chinese companies that are currently traded on the U.S. exchanges, and that is part of why the NASDAQ was off more than the other indexes, because the NASDAQ has a lot more China exposure than the other two. So I think that was more driving the markets than the other nonsense. On a positive note, though, and there was some really positive things this week, the economic data was generally very strong. We saw a good, really good, actually, new single-family home sales increase, up 7.1% in August, and the supply of homes dropped from 5.9 months to 5.5 months. That's a big one-month drop. Additionally, the median price increased from a year ago, coming in at $328,400, up 2.2% from last year. That's not a huge increase, but it still outpaced the government estimate of inflation in the past year. And that rise in August contributed to an already very strong year-over-year rise, bringing the total to 18%, which is pretty astounding.
Not bad.
One of the major complaints during the last 10 years of expansion has been that incomes have not grown much while the economy has been improving. Well, those days are gone, thank goodness. Personal income rose 0.4% in August, bringing the annual increase to 4.6%. That's the largest annual increase we have seen during this expansion, and more proof that the consumer is healthy and further rate cuts by the Fed are unwarranted, although I won't say they won't happen because it could very well happen.
Oh, it could.
And it wouldn't surprise me at all if we saw a December rate cut, but I just don't see any reason for it right now except to catch up with the rest of the world.
You're talking about need versus practicality.
Right. One of the best reports this week was the new orders for durable goods, which was forecasted to decline 1.1% and ended up rising 0.2%. This gain followed a 1.8% increase in June and a 2% gain in July. Annualized over the last 3 months, durable good orders are increasing at a 17.2% annualized rate. That's pretty incredible.
And the best part of that is that that is a longer-term indicator for the economy.
Correct.
It takes a long time to build them, it takes a long time to use them, and it takes a long time to pay for them.
Yep, that includes things like aircraft, both civilian and military, and larger big-ticket items. One report that met expectations was the final revision to second quarter GDP, which came in at an unrevised 2%. Core real GDP, which strips out inventories, net exports, and government purchases, rose at a 3.3% annualized rate. So 2% isn't setting the world on fire, but it's certainly not hurting.
Yeah, it's showing some caution in the business community, and who can blame them?
Yeah, there's so much uncertainty with what's happening in Washington, so I get it.
Yeah, going forward, it's going to be very interesting for a little while. All right, trivia question this week brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. Call Ken at 904-636-7888. I mentioned that we're going to do a little talk about taxes. And one thing I want to know is what percentage of Americans know what tax bracket they personally are in? And Adam missed it quite a bit, as I would. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after the break. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have the trivia question out there. It says, how many Americans are actually aware of their own income tax bracket? It is something of a surprise, perhaps. Well, let's see. Speaking of taxes, Miss Pelosi has a prescription for making things better for the poor people of this country. It's called taxing their medicine, but not the outrageous medicine, the ones that are absolutely vital for day-to-day living. It's called the PMT, Pelosi Medicine Tax. Now, here's her, I'm going to say reasoning, but I'm going to put it in air quotes. Here's her reasoning. If you want to get control of drug prices, you can either do what Trump is doing, or you can do what Pelosi wants to do. You tell them how much you can charge. That's it. She's going to tell them, and if they fight it, then they'll take it to arbitration by a government arbitrator who will again tell them what they're going to charge. That's it. If they want any more than that, there is going to be a little tax placed on it, and that tax will, of course, be passed on to the consumers. So if you're taking something for cholesterol or high blood pressure or anything like that, like some of us are, this little tiny prescription drug tax from Pelosi amounts to only 95%. Now, you tell me sometime, someplace, and some issue on which imposing a 95% tax is good economics, and I'll turn in my economics degree.
I'm not going to comment on this except to say that might be the worst idea I've ever heard.
It's very possible. Her limit has to apply to at least 25 of the most popular drugs in America, and can go up as high as 250 of them. How many new drugs do you think will be on the table in the next few years?
Is there a number?
Yeah, my computer's not working.
Well,
but that doesn't matter because we have a caller. Good morning.
Good morning. The question being, what percentage of Americans are aware of what tax bracket they are in?
They are personally in, yes.
Yep.
I would say 2%, and that represents the wealthiest 2% that Bernie Sanders wants to get rid of by raising their tax bracket to 100%.
That is the best wrong answer I've ever had.
Well, you know, the other 98% are totally oblivious. They don't even know what a bracket is. All they do is look at the at their paycheck stub, see what the withholding is, if they even bother to read that. And that's why they wind up getting ridiculous refunds of $1,200 every year because they withhold too much. But that's a separate story.
Yep.
So anyway, that's my guess for your trivia question. Am I right?
That was so good.
That was good.
Absolutely good. Adam answered it more along the lines that I was originally thinking, and he was wrong too, but for the other reason. I wouldn't have come up with this one in a long time, and I absolutely love it. I feel like declaring you the winner, but I can't legally.
Okay, gentlemen. Have a good day.
Love
all right,
Nicole.
Good guess,
thank
though.
Man,
I think
that was priceless.
I think he gave a little too much credit saying that people look at their withholdings. I think they only look
take
at...
home pay, man.
No, not even that. I think it's the refund. What did I get for a refund?
Well, that's true. If you ask most people what they pay in taxes, a lot of them will tell you, I didn't pay anything. I got money back.
Right.
There are other people who are in a bracket of zero, but they don't see it that way because payroll taxes get withheld from their check. So they think they're paying something into the system.
Right. And just so you know, payroll taxes cover Social Security, yeah. Medicare, things like that.
That's call them insurance premiums, not payroll taxes.
Right.
And also there's a lot of people that don't realize that every penny that's withheld for payroll taxes on your check is matched by your employer. And if you don't think that that's part of your overall pay, go self-employed for a while.
Yeah, and then you get to pay double what you paid when you worked for someone else.
You'll soon acquire an understanding for the price of one person working. And by the way, off subject just a little tiny bit, we passed a milestone this month. Not one I wanted to pass. The average cost of health insurance to the American family now just went over $20,000.
Wait, per year?
Month. Year.
Year.
Yeah, $20,000 a year.
Yeah, I buy that.
Which means somebody working full-time, 2,080 hours, at $10 wouldn't have much left.
So those numbers are skewed
I know they are.
By the elderly, yeah. Who tend to require more and expensive procedures.
But it's just insurance.
But yeah, it's on average, I would definitely believe that. Because I know we pay, gosh, we must pay at least 10 grand a year.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of my pieces today is going to be on the cost of Medicare and how controllable it is for some people. That's another thing that people don't know. They don't know how much Medicare costs. It's a big deal, and I'm going to get into some of the weeds on that in a little bit. But I read things like the Pelosi 95% tax, and it just bugs me to the point where I want to throw things at the TV set or something.
Sometimes I would love to challenge all politicians to come up with a solution that doesn't involve a new tax. Is that even possible?
Nope. I think it's been tried. Hmm. All right, fun fact. You want a fun fact in between these awful things? The Green Bay Packers blew it on Thursday night.
Such a heartbreaker.
They've been giving away 11 points to the other team all year. What was it, 40-some? Some crazy thing that was scored against them, 30, 40, whatever. But that has absolutely nothing to do with what I'm about to tell you. What I'm about to tell you has only to do with the Green Bay Packers. They are named after the Indian Packing Company. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that. In 1919, the Indian Packing Company gave the team $500 so they could purchase their equipment. Not bad, huh?
Yeah. I hope they took an equity stake in the
startup
team.
Costs now. A little higher.
Yeah.
So ownership costs a little higher yet.
You couldn't outfit one player for $500 today.
Oh, that's the truth. Yeah, okay. I guess I'm in a crazy mood today. A lot of stuff has happened, as I said. Wednesday, headline, pay zero income tax, a new book. Pay zero. You know how you do that?
Don't make any money.
Bingo! You need a whole book to say that? I don't. You know the list of people that I say, don't bother reading it when you see their name on there? There's a lot of them. This one is from Banyan Hill. And that's one of those names you can put on your list, folks. Save your time. Friday. It doesn't matter if Peloton shares tumbled on their first day, says Yahoo Finance. But I think it sort of does. Because who doesn't it matter to?
Well, who it does matter to are the investors that subscribe to those IPO shares.
I would take it one step further.
But, okay, so there's one thing about IPOs and that I completely disagree with, and the thing is people think that they're supposed to pop on the first day.
Exactly.
If they do that, that means that you did a disservice. The investment bankers did a disservice to the company because their shares were worth a lot more. They underpriced them, and they lost out on a lot of money. The shares should actually stay about where they were sold initially. And that means that both that you priced it right and that if the company grows, the investors win, vice versa.
You're exactly right, and that's why I was going to take this one step further and say those shares were overpriced.
They were.
And therefore, the investment bankers that put the syndicate together and brought these things public are not going to be viewed in the same light. It kind of reminds me of the old S&P and Moody's thing back in the 07, where all the collateralized mortgage obligations and so on were being classified by who was issuing them, like Citibank and
right. And
what was the big insurance company?
AIG.
AIG, yeah.
But not by the actual
mortgages. Their credit
rating
was applied by the rating agencies to the obligations. And those obligations had components from the best credit to the very worst credit, and they were being advertised at the highest credit rating. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, that was outright fraud.
It was. And I don't think that everybody could truly understand just how bad it was. But think back what happened between 06 and 08, and the stock market, the housing market, people losing jobs, people losing homes. That was a very, very dark period in American history. And I wonder how we can prevent things like that in the future. And when I see things go really wrong like this, it worries me. I guess I kind of in a negative mood this week, aren't I?
I guess so.
I think it has to do with everything that happened in Congress and stupidity. Yet you accuse somebody of things based on a secondhand person who hates that somebody without any evidence, and you go to practically to trial in the media. You haven't seen a document yet. Is this sensible behavior for an American, an elected American especially?
It's not, but it just shows that the government has gone from what they were designed to be to they don't care about us at all. Exactly. On either side of the aisle. They only care about winning. And this is setting a precedent that I fear is going to be whoever gets elected next, the other side's just going to try and take them down, and it's going to be tit for tat for here on out. I really worry about that.
Is this one of the ways that you can give up your republic? Ben Franklin may have been right, folks.
Exactly. Isn't this what happened to Rome?
Yeah. There's a bunch of fiddling going on there. All right, I promise the second half of the show I'm going to be much more upbeat, and you'll probably enjoy the change. So I don't even like thinking the way I'm thinking right now, so I'll get over it. Not to worry. See you right after the break. We've got a few more good topics. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And the trivia question is still out there. How many Americans are aware of their own tax bracket? We know it's higher than 2%, but I'd love that answer, but it's still higher. And I'll take it plus or minus 2% from the actual. And the actual, of course, is done by a survey, and that's what people said. There's probably a chance, and this would be arguable, that they don't mean it. They just think they know, but disregard that. How many Americans claim to know their own tax bracket? All right, last week I was talking about Social Security earnings, and this all arose in our office a few weeks ago when somebody said, what earnings count for Social Security? So being the direct type people we are, we said, that depends, which is pretty much how I answer everything, because it's not a simple yes or no A or B question. So last week, I started on this and said, it depends which part of Social Security you're looking at. One is earning benefits and getting paid a certain amount. That was last week's topic. And those are all dependent on you and your personal earned income. So you can be living off dividends and so on, well, as high as you want, and it doesn't do anything for increasing your Social Security benefits. It is dependent on your 35 highest earning years. That's what is calculated into the formula for Social Security. And when you arrive at the point where you're going to claim benefits, it is completely dependent on the universal formula applied to your particular earnings. It does not matter if you are married, have been married, weren't ever married. It doesn't make a bit of difference. Your spouse can have a totally different earned income and therefore benefit than you do, and it does not matter. But part two says, all right, now that I know how much I'm getting, how much can I keep? And this is a big deal because, let's face it, what really matters except what you take home and live on? So you look at two different ways where your Social Security income is going to be reduced. It will not necessarily be reduced by either of them. It is very likely to be reduced by both of them, and it's also possible to do one or the other. The reason I say that is that the number one part is Medicare payments. You have premiums that you have to pay into Medicare, and most Social Security recipients who did not file early anyway are in Medicare. That starts at 65. A lot of people do file early Social Security, but believe me, the second they file, and for Medicare type, what they're receiving in Social Security benefits will be reduced by that Medicare payment, and they will not get a bill any longer for that. In other words, whenever Medicare can get their money through your Social Security payment, they will. Not that there's anything really wrong with it. But you don't know for sure what it is, and most people don't know what they're paying. The base amount right now for Medicare A is zero. Almost everybody pays zero. But Medicare B costs you money. Base amount is $135.50 a month. Well, after the base is my old friend IRMA, I-R-M-A-A, which stands for Income-Related Monthly Adjustment Amounts, or, as I like to call them, price increases. If you make more money together, you will pay more for your Medicare B. Now, what does this include? Your earned income, your spouse's earned income, and all of your unearned income, virtually all of it. There is a formula in Medicare called the Modified Adjusted Gross Income. Most of you don't ever have to worry about that. You just go back to your last year's taxes and look at the adjusted gross income line on your 1040, and that will tell you what they're going to look at. If you're an investor with tax-free interest, things like that, there might be some adjustments. If you want to know the exact formula, a simple internet search, just go to irs.gov. You can get it anywhere you want, medicare.gov. So, okay, you got it now, and you've got an AGI. So let's say you're pulling down a couple grand a month, and then all of a sudden you have a really good year. So you're making a lot more money. Instead of taking out $135.50, they're going to take out perhaps $189 or $214 or $270 or $133.5. There's all kinds of them. It goes up to $460.50 a month. And this is for people making a lot of money. It would be $500,000 single and $750 for a married couple. But a lot of people pay more than $135.50. Now, I would challenge everybody listening who is on Medicare and is getting it deducted from their Social Security, I would challenge you to find out what you're paying. Most people do not know. They don't know that as well as they don't know their tax brackets. So that's still not the end of the reductions. Now, we have income taxes. Not all of your Social Security will be taxed. Some people will not have taxes on it at all. Other people will have taxes on half of it, and the rest of us will pay taxes on 85% of it. So nobody goes without getting some tax-free Social Security. That's bottom line on this. You get 100% tax-free, 50% tax-free, 15% tax-free. That formula, likewise, is available on a simple internet search, and it's very easy to calculate. So what have I sort of been beating around but haven't hit yet? What do you pay taxes on? What do you mean when you say, well, taxes on my Social Security? Let's say I'm getting $2,000 and I'm paying out $135. Okay, then are you being taxed on $165 or whatever? No. You're being taxed on the whole $2,000. The more you pay for Medicare, the higher your marginal bracket moves because you're paying out more money and it's all being taxed in the first place. This is not good. You can get yourself into a heap of trouble. How do they find out if you've had a good year? Well, if you've had a good year, IRS every year, once you file, will put your income over into Medicare, and they will plug it in. And if it happened to go up and be over one of these breakpoints, the next bill you get from Medicare will be higher, and it will be higher for that whole year. What happens if you're getting toward the end of the line, making a lot of money, paying a lot for Medicare, and then all of a sudden something happens? And I have a few somethings that might be included. Divorce or annulment of marriage, retirement. And remember, this could be for either spouse because we're talking about family income here. Reduced work hours. Pension plan being altered by a company. A prior non-recurring settlement. So you might have had a windfall one year and not the next year. Loss of income from an owned property. Well, that way you might fall down into an income tax bracket that would allow you to pay less for Medicare, right? Can you change it? Yes, you can. That is something very few people know. But if you have just experienced what Medicare calls a life-changing event, which would be any of those, you can apply to them. There's sort of a form letter on the Medicare website to do it and say, this has happened in my life. This has happened to the income. I no longer think that I should be paying the higher level of Medicare premium. And lo and behold, if you are correct and if you can document the change, they will actually not only lower your costs, but they'll make it retroactive for you and send you an additional check for that. Does it work? Yes, I did it. One year when we were changing and we had a year where income dropped sharply, We applied it to Medicare, and everything I just told you was as easy as just documenting the situation. All I ever try to do here, I never try to tell you how exactly to do something. We always try to tell you what can be done and where to go to look for help. And, of course, anything you don't understand, you can always email us at the company website, FamilyFinancial.com. You can call us at the office. That's 904-685-1505. Of course, you can call the show, or you can ask us to explain something further on next week's show. Any of those things will work. But if you understand what you're paying for Medicare, it's a good start. Find out. Go to Medicare.gov. Go to Social Security and look at your benefits check payment. It'll tell you line item by line item what you were paying and why. Take charge. This is real, honest to goodness money. And remember, after 2019, medical payments are no longer an itemized deduction. So if you're itemizing now and part of it's on the medical expenses, I think you owe it to yourself. If you're going to have any medical stuff done, get it paid for this year. We'll be back right after the break. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And this segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. Give Troy a call at 662-9794. Lines are open, 222-TALK. And the trivia question remains out there. How many Americans know their own individual tax bracket? We know it's above 2%. All right, Adam, take it away.
Sure. So this is something I've been watching pretty closely over the last year, and it's one of the most un-American things I've ever seen. I mentioned before, personal income is up 4.6% in the last year. During that time, spending has increased only 3.7%. And what does that mean?
Savings?
That means that Americans are saving. This is not the American way.
No.
Spending should be increasing at a faster rate than personal income.
No wonder GDP is only going up at 2%.
Exactly.
What's wrong with you people?
We have no one to blame but ourselves. So that's something I'll be interested to see if that trend continues, because Americans are, we're joking around, but we really are not known for saving a big portion of our income. But this data, this has been going on for a while. It really looks like Americans are more inclined to save. Now, it could be a generational thing with the millennials. It could be a reaction to the Great Recession and the subsequent slow growth years that we saw after the Great Recession. I'm not sure yet. I think it will all shake out in the next 5 years or so. But it's actually a pretty encouraging sign.
It is.
If it continues. So
I don't remember the exact numbers, but I have read recently the savings rate in Japan and China, and it's astronomical.
It compared to us.
Yeah, 19%.
Yeah, it is. Yep.
Like that.
That is true. I also wanted to get into something. This is a trend that's been happening through the years. It's about 401k enrollment. It used to be when you signed up for a job, they would ask you, do you want to participate in the 401k if they had one?
And very often you'd say, well, how soon can I do it? And they'd tell you 1 year.
Right. That's also true. And then you had to opt into it.
Exactly.
Well, more and more companies these days are including an auto enrollment feature, which defaults you into the plan, and then you have to take the option to opt out of the plan. So more than half in 2016, more than half of all 401k plans are now auto enrolled. And that's up from 28% in 2011. So it's a pretty major trend.
And you know, that contributes to the number you were just talking about.
It does. It absolutely does.
Which was the purpose of the whole thing anyway.
Exactly. The percentage contribution by employees has also gone up. It's, let's see, 29% are now contributing at least 6%. And in 2011, that number, there was only 17% of people that were contributing 6%. But the most popular option is still 3% of pay. So only,
which isn't enough to make you retire rich, but it certainly helps.
Right. And this number has probably gone up since this research was done. But right now, 40% of plans match up to 6%, but more are still matching at only 3%. And obviously, matching at 6% encourages more participation. So I think as companies make more money and get more profitable, that's a change that you're seeing more often as well. All these evil companies increasing their match.
Exactly.
I know. the default investment choice for most plans, 96% of plans, is target date funds, which I think is great. That is, if you don't know what you're doing as a novice investor, a target date fund is probably the place you want to go. So the reason that I brought this up is that auto enrollment plans are really make a huge difference. Right now, plans that do auto enrollment have an enrollment rate of 88% versus 48% for plans that do not auto enroll. That's a huge difference.
That's big.
Definitely. So the reason that a lot of this came around is that an economist named Richard Thaler, he sort of invented this type of behavioral economics. He actually won a Nobel Prize in 2017 for a book called Nudge. And Nudge, the theory is that you do just little tiny things that spur masses of people to change their behaviors in minor ways that benefit the population. And this was one of them. And I think that the results are pretty clear that it works.
I think it's a fantastic idea. And when you can cite a percentage like that, that makes it a fantastic idea.
Here's another one. They did this in the United Kingdom as well. And auto enrollment was established in 2012, and private sector pension schemes jumped from 2.7 million to 7.7 million people in 2016. So in 4 years, it went up by 5 million people.
Well, the other good thing about that, let's say for young people starting out getting their first job with an auto enroll from day one, hopefully, so they don't get used to their whole paycheck. Again, we're talking about take-home pay a little earlier.
Mm-hmm.
If your take-home pay has already been reduced by your initial savings, you're not going to miss that. Whereas if you start a year later and say, okay, start withholding 3%, you're going to see your paycheck go down.
Right, and that's much more painful.
The psychology of saving is very, very important.
Mm-hmm. If you don't ever have it, you don't miss it.
Yeah, exactly. And if you don't understand how important it's going to be, you will eventually, and it'll be too late. Right. How much do people really know about their taxes? You've heard me talk about the website NerdWallet. It's one of the more interesting things out there. The free section has a bunch of things on it. You can pay for more. I don't. It's because there are so many other things out there. But a lot of Americans have this misguided opinion that certain tax reduction strategies are actually illegal. Certain ones maybe, but not a few of the biggies, like making an extra mortgage payment. Now, all that means is you can make your 13th payment this year. Next year, it's not going to work because you already have made January. But if you've got a year where you're concerned about your taxes and you've been paying only 12 payments and you are itemizing, fine, just make the 13th. You can always adjust it in some year when you're not itemizing. How about opening or contributing to an IRA after December 31? There are a lot of people think, well, you can't do that because it'd be for last year. Well, yes, you can do it. You've got till April 15th to do those things, and you can actually reduce your taxable income after the fact, even after you've got a W-2 in your hand. Delaying income. Well, there are companies, if you're going to get a bonus in December, who will ask you, would you like it this year or next year? And it's especially true if the company is on a fiscal year rather than a calendar year. But also, what about self-employed people? You might just not invoice in the month of December if you don't want to. People think it's illegal. It's not. It's absolutely not. You're in total control. This study NerdWallet did found also that higher income households worry more and understand more. No surprise whatsoever. 1 in 4 Americans think they're going to get audited. Very high likelihood of being audited. In truth, in 2016, 0.7% of Americans were audited. Even when you get way up over $200,000, the audit rate was only 1.7%. And let's face it, if you're worried about being audited, it means you think you did something wrong. So A, don't worry too much about it, but B, of course, means don't do things that are wrong. 7% of Americans do not know what a tax bracket is, much less what theirs is. That's sad, folks. That's really, really sad. Many Americans do not understand the progressive tax system, and they do not understand that everybody pays the same rate on their first $20,000 and their next $20,000 and so on. It's just how many $20,000s you add up that determine your marginal rate. There is a misconception out there. Man, we heard this a lot in our office and on our radio shows over the years. People think a 529 plan is deductible. It is not. There are no deductible college savings plans at the federal level. There are states that have income taxes that will allow you to deduct contributions at the state level. It does not matter if you choose to use it in that state. Fine, you get the deduction. But if you'd rather go to the Utah plan or something like that, you just don't get the deduction. But if you're paying a state income tax, you may want to look into that. Most people don't realize, and this is the one that just breaks my heart, that almost everybody got a tax cut in 2017. And that piece of information is one of the most important things that you should know about what's been going on lately. Go back and look a couple years ago at your return and then at last year's. And I think you're going to find that you are actually doing much better. Then go further. Take a look at the bracket you're in and how much room was left in that bracket. See if you can change your income up or down a little bit and the impact on your taxes. We can help you with a lot of that planning. So if you want to, again, if you want to come in and see us and bring a couple years of tax returns, we can help you do things that will be very beneficial. Since 52% of you do think you know what your tax bracket is, I challenge all 100% of you to know for sure, both the ones that think they do and the ones that think they don't. Look it up. You can really, really help yourself a lot by paying the right amount of taxes, period. See you next week. This is the VanWeef Financial Hour.